Welcome to the Chatting in Manhattan radio show with your hosts Kim Ward and Garth Sandiford. Hosts that go past the biographies of individuals to bring you the real story behind the greatest minds and most inspiring people. Join us as we put our guests into the spotlight to reveal the greatness that has brought them success. Chatting in Manhattan. The story starts where the biography ends. So, put your hands together and be inspired with the Chatting in Manhattan radio show.
Hi, this is Garth Sandiford, and welcome to another amazing Chatting in Manhattan show. And with me today, I have the amazing Gabriella Guglielminotti-Trivo, who is joining us to talk about her Arctic Odyssey and her life and what made her decide to, you know, go to this part of the world and all those interesting things. So, Gabriella, welcome to the Chatting in Manhattan show.
Thank you, Garth. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, you know, we've been working at bringing this interview together for a while now, and I got to say, you know, sometimes some things are just worth the wait. And I was privileged to get a copy of your book and started to read it, and I got to tell you, there's some really amazing things in there. So for the benefit of our listeners, why don't you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you are located currently in the world, and whatever else you would like to say at that point.
Okay. I'm originally from Italy. I have been living in UK almost for 15 years now, and I've been also working in UK. And I would say a coach, but I am not a normal kind of personal coach. I'm a menstrual coach, which means basically I have the privilege to open up women to a new awareness, which is their menstrual awareness, or, you know, leaving their body fully. That's what I normally say to explain what I do.
Mm-hmm.
My book, though, Antarctic Odyssey, A New Beginning, is about my personal journey of a week and a bit to Antarctica, and specifically to the Antarctic Peninsula. There are very few people in the world that go to Antarctica, and there are not many more. They know Antarctica is a huge continent that of the size of Europe and Australia put together. So it's pretty big space.
Yeah, it is. And you know, when I came across your book last year in one of the many emails that I got, and I started to look at the cover, and then I went to your website, and I said, oh my, this woman is interesting, and I immediately got excited because I love it when I meet or come across people who are doing amazing things, and you happen to be such a person. And then I also saw that picture of that beautiful plane, that stainless steel plane at the top of your website, and that really got me excited. So you're a menstrual coach, and you're originally from Italy, and now you're been living in the UK. What was your motivation to take this odyssey to Antarctica?
Okay, I will try to put it in a nutshell. I was born as a woman, and very early on, I was really happy about it. I'm saying this because it might explain why I ended up doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
If we step back a bit and we go back to 2005, 2007, it was a very tough time for me, a transition time where I was going through divorce. I was actually married to an Englishman. That time represented for me the beginning of the big reconnection with my own inner self. It was very tough, but like all tough periods in anybody's life, with hindsight, we tend to realize there were turning points. For me, that was definite turning point. And at the time, besides divorcing, I also discovered NLP. I trained in NLP, that is neuro-linguistic programming. And I also went back a bit to what I was interested originally, and I had already developed it when I was still living in Italy, which was personal development.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened in that time, I basically lost all my background that was mainly linked to my marriage. And so, because of my interest, I kind of rebuilt around me a supporting group of people who were, like me, interested in personal development. Now, what happened, besides asking what I do here, I need to change my career, many other things, I came across to Peter Blend that at an event, and he was one of the speakers, and he was just saying that he was taking a group to Antarctica, a group of people that would be interested in facing their fears and limiting beliefs. Now, I had trained in neuro-linguistic programming not long before, and so, of course, I was very interested in something like that. I always been interested in testing myself.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's the best thing you can do in life, otherwise it's boring.
All right.
So I thought to join, and hence I went there. I hadn't kind of planned in my life before to travel to Antarctica. It just kind of, it seemed to happen. But sometimes those kind of serendipity events of our life, they do happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to go back, you know, real quick, because in the beginning, when you started to explain, you made a comment that you were born as a woman. What was that about? What do you mean by that?
Well, we have chance of 50-50, right? Either we are born as men or women.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but very early on, what I mean is that very early on, I realized that I was very lucky that I was a woman.
Okay.
But back then, I didn't know. I was too little, obviously, to realize the full involvement, meaning, I would rather say, of the word woman.
Uh-huh.
That came through life and definitely ripened totally and fully in the last 5 or 6 years of my life.
Okay. So you had this chance encounter and an opportunity to take this journey, and it is considered to be a journey that most people would be intimidated by, or they would be fearful. And what makes people fearful when they think of Antarctica? What is it about Antarctica that drew you?
Well, yeah, well, it's definitely one of the coldest and windiest places on Earth. So for somebody like me that loves the Mediterranean weather, I'm suffering enough being in UK, so you can imagine that Antarctica wasn't really on my list. And that was even more a challenge for me, because the purpose of going there, it wasn't really to look and see the penguins in person, in reality, but it was actually to face fears. And I was wondering which kind of fears might come up for me, because I'm quite flexible and agile and always love the outdoors. So ice climbing or kayaking, it wouldn't really concern me. So I was sure something would show up for me, obviously, but I didn't know what.
Okay.
And I explained what happened and how it was for me in my book.
Okay. Now, I know on your website you have a video, a trailer video, and there was a part in the video where you put on a bathing suit and you got in the water. And my mind said, okay, either that woman is crazy or she's facing a fear right now, but that water has got to be bloody cold. What did it feel like, the water?
I tell you something. I did years ago my diving test exams and whatever you want to call it when I was still living in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an open water assessment as well. and it was in Italy, so north of Italy, but still it was May, June, so kind of it should be warmish. And I remember during that test that it was so cold that I thought I would die. And to why I'm saying this, because the water, for whatever was the reason, the water in the Antarctic Peninsula where I swam felt not as cold as it felt when I did my open water exam or test for diving. So I'm saying this because, yes, it was cold, but maybe, as they say, it's all in the mind. I did fireworks in the past in my life. Mm-hmm. And if somebody might ask me, well, how hot was the fire? It would be possibly be the same answers. As hot as you think it will be. And possibly the water was as cold as I thought it might be, but I was surprised that actually maybe I prepared myself for such a cold water that I found it actually wasn't that bad.
All right. Well, the far walk, I've done that many times, so I get that analogy. But, you know, when you think of Antarctica, you know, you think of a really, really cold place. Now, you talk about facing fears. So you are on this journey. How long did this journey last for you?
You mean in the Antarctic Peninsula?
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I met with this group of people that were part from UK and mainly from Australia in Ushuaia, which is the southernmost tip of Argentina. It's also called Tierra del Fuego. And from there, we embarked on a ship, which was a strengthened hull ship, a ship that is also used for experiments, you know, laboratory tests, stuff like that. And we traveled through the Drake Passage down to the Antarctic Peninsula, and we stayed there for a week and came back. That was the length of the trip.
Okay, so it was a week.
Well, it was longer because just traveling across the Drake Passage takes 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
So time really disappears over there, especially when you are at sea.
Yeah. So going back to, you know, facing fears, what were some of the fears that came up for you, and what were some of the fears that you had to face?
As I mentioned earlier, I wasn't sure before leaving what it would be for me that might show up. I wasn't really thinking about it, scared by ice climbing. Yes, I was concerned about jumping to the sea or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering. And then I thought, well, we'll see. I was just there with an open mind. And actually, for me, what it was the hardest part of the trip, it was more of an emotional challenge. And that's what I actually explain in the book. I basically recollect and share with people my personal inner fears. They are more kind of emotional or psychological, or thoughts that were I had to kind of face, more caused by my upbringing, conditioning, and they were more possibly limiting beliefs rather than fear in itself.
Yeah, like can you give me an example of a limited belief that you had?
Yes, I found that there was so much uncertainty and lack of self-confidence and fear of the unknown that showed up that I wouldn't have imagined it would happen to me.
Okay.
And also, being in such a restricted place with a group of people, you know, it's very difficult to hide. and it's much easier to be exposed to others, and by being exposed to others, you are exposed to yourself anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And also some of the talks during the trip travel, they were tackling these subjects. And I don't know, it was almost like all flared up. And for me, the biggest challenge was I had planned to buy some photographic gear because I wanted to film. And that, it was for me a kind of an extra challenge because I never really filmed before. But I wanted to do that because I wanted to do something to be able to share this big privilege I had to spend the time and the money to on a trip like this. Not
mm-hmm.
everybody can have the, you know, the fortune to go on. And so I did that, and that was so dear in my heart. So my hidden fear was that I might lose it all.
Mm-hmm.
And actually that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened almost at the beginning of it. And for me, the emotional, I would say trauma, but it makes me laugh as well, but it was so huge that I got into shock state. And when you go into a shock state, you are not really aware that you are in shock. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a shock.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of really froze me. And funnily enough, isn't it such an absurd to go to the coldest place on earth and being frozen by something that is totally internal, is emotional, and is a psychological kind of fear more than something that really happened physically. How this happened was basically as follows. We went for ice climbing. It was the first day we were setting foot on the continent, and we put all our gear on this little beach, on this place where we were about to tackle this ice wall. And I took my camera, my camcorder with me, because I thought it would be a good opportunity to film.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, but because I never done that before, maybe it might be better if I just for the first half an hour, I just give it a go and then I can film later. And so I left it in my rucksack. And what happened was, while I was ice climbing, like other people of the group that I was with, we heard a big bang, huge, humongous bang. And what happened, this bang was caused by a huge iceberg not far away that just cracked and basically sank. And it was wonderful to see. It was a wonderful natural show happening in that precise moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it really looked like, you know, the transatlantic ship, the Titanic, it really looked like that. And like the Titanic, like broke in the almost in the middle, and you could see the bow coming up and then sink. That happened exactly in the same way, and I could see it all, and I was in such awe, and I was speechless, and I froze because I couldn't believe that was happening actually in front of me. I didn't realize that actually that would have caused an enormous wave that would have obviously reached us very quickly and covered in water the beach where we left our stuff. And so before I realized, I basically saw my whole photographic gear going, disappearing, and there was nothing I could do. And that put me in a state of shock, and I did. When you go into shock, it might take maybe some time to come out of it. And then you realize really that you have been in shock and you weren't aware. So that's basically what happened to me. And it had an effect on the following days. And it took me some time to recover.
Right. So this iceberg broke and it fell into the water and it caused a big wave to come to the shore where your gear was and it got all sucked up into the water.
Yes.
Wow. And you just stood there and watched it while you were hanging. Where were you on the ice climb? Were you on a cliff or?
It was an ice wall near a beach, and it was kind of handy for us to leave our stuff there and just tackle the, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you personally, where were you standing when you saw this? What were you standing on?
I had already climbed up, and I was coming down, so to give a chance to my buddy, the woman I was buddied with, for her to go up. So I was all tackled and tied up with a rope, crampons on my feet. So there was no way that I could really jump and hop on different rocks on the beach to reach my rucksack. And I realized that I couldn't do it, so I just stood there and watched it. But in situations like that, if you don't take active part in it, it's even worse in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like kind of if you act and react to it, somehow it's easier than maybe to kind of get rid of the shock in itself psychologically and emotionally. But if you just are a witness of it, it tends to be worse. So I definitely experienced that before in my life. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay, fantastic. So you had this day and it kind of set you up for the rest of the journey. And how did you pull yourself through? You said you were in the shock. How did you pull yourself through the shock? When did you come out of it? How many days did it take?
Well, it took some time. And I remember that it was only when I went back into my cabin on the ship that I realized, and I took all the, because we retrieved the rucksack, and so obviously it was all full of water, and I knew that my gear would be useless after that. But anyway, I took it in my cabin, I put it all out to dry out. And I remember that it was back then that I looked at everything and I realized I could have been in the sea and I could have died.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only in that moment that I realized that, wow, maybe it was better just to lose the camera. And so I remember feeling crying because I hadn't realized that I was actually lucky.
Wow.
And that happens in moments of shock.
Mm-hmm.
You have the relapse right after when you are coming out little by little, and so you have emotions coming up.
Yeah. You know, I really thank you for sharing this experience with me, because part of me, you know, as I listen to you talk about it, feels like I was there with you to some degree. Although I didn't see what you saw and felt what you felt, I could, you know, hear in your voice the experience of it.
Well, you know what, I tell you, it was the most astonishing thing that I still nowadays, when I think about it, I go back there, is the fact that in that precise moment, I just became like a pair of eyes. And I completely forgot about me or my identity or anything else. I couldn't even feel my body any longer. I just, all I was, a pair of eyes looking and witnessing something beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I felt part of nature. And I didn't feel like any kind of boundaries between me and everything else that was around me. It's something that it's difficult to experience on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
I experienced a similar thing also when we went night camping. You might think, oh, in such a desolate place, it might be very silent. Actually, no, it's not. Nature over there, because of the wind, because of the ice, is very noisy. And it's really an opening, an enlightening experience to feel and be part of something that is so big that you feel so minuscule. And at the same time, there's a part of your awareness, of your conscience that is there. It's almost like the boundaries, they fall apart,
mm-hmm.
and that you melt with everything else. It's a kind of a bit of a mystic experience.
Wow. I just, you know, I'm sort of kind of like speechless, which doesn't happen often, but I'm just like, wow. I mean, what, you know, as you described like different parts of Antarctic journey, your journey, I'm like, wow, I never even thought of that before. And you know, that's just interesting. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, here I am in New York City. And, you know, the coldest weather I think I've ever experienced is probably maybe, what, 10 degrees or minus or something like that. But it's not real cold. And for the most part, you know, we had a challenge last year where we had a hurricane hit us and, you know, it was loss of power for, you know, several days. But for the most part, life is pretty comfortable. Life is pretty cozy. We have access to everything. And here you are out in the Antarctica, having this experience and having this awareness. Now, how cool is that?
Well, I don't know how to explain it, but the answer is possibly in my book. Because since that happened, because I wanted to produce a documentary, I was fixed on this thing for a year, 2 years after I came back.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of kept banging my head against this wall called, the documentary, I want to do this. And then, you know, when things are not meant to be and you just don't find the contacts or whatever it is, it took me more than 2 years to realize, but Gabriella, why don't you just take off all the censorship that can happen in your mind and you just pour your heart and just share with whoever might want to read it what happened to you, because it was a journey within the journey. For me, it was more of an inner journey that was had really emotional and psychological depth,
mm-hmm.
More than a physical, like on the strength type of testing trip. Okay. Okay, we were on board of a ship, so it's not that we were walking across the whole continent or stuff like that, but that wasn't the purpose of the trip. For me, it was very difficult to find a good enough meaning to sit myself at the table and start writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know, tell you straight away why. We all have such big sensor within ourselves that cut off so many things that we decide they're not important. But it's not true. Sometimes something that to you is normal, for another person is not. So who are you to say, oh, this is not important, to censor that, and by not sharing, you are actually refraining from somebody else maybe learn from that. And it was only in that moment when I realized, but I'm censoring this thing. Why do I do that? I learned from so many people in the past, from people that they stepped out of their comfort zone. And because they didn't censor and they share their experience, I learned a lot. And I became also the person I am now because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only when I realized that I had no right to censor that maybe might have been much more useful to share it. Yes, you feel naked because if that's what it happens, you feel naked to completely say how it was for you and just share your intimate thoughts.
Right. Now, I know in your book is filled with many amazing photos. How many people were on this journey with you on that boat? How many people were on that boat?
We were roughly 30 people.
30 people. And I know, you know, from, you know, going through your book that you took a lot of photos and some of them, you know, made it to your book, obviously. What were some of the sights that you saw while you were on this journey that, you know, just put you in awe?
Well, the Le Maire Channel was definitely one of the places that it was so amazing that I just couldn't believe. And it was towards the end of it. And I remember back then, it was towards the end of the week, and it was going through that channel, which is called Le Maire channel,
mm-hmm.
that we all were out on the deck to see it, to admire the panorama, of obviously, in nature. And I remember that back then, I was frozen on the deck, and I was still feeling the loss of not being able, like many other people in the group, to take pictures myself, which mm-hmm. is something I adore. I started taking pictures when I was 16 years old. So I taken pictures for most of my life. And I remember in anticipation of this trip, for 9 months, I was dreaming of the beautiful picture that might have been taken over there and all the rest. And I'm fascinated by eyes. And so I was really thinking of all the shades of light, you know, mm-hmm. that you see through that reflect in the sea and the icebergs and the mountains and everything else. And I was there in that heaven on earth, really, and I couldn't capture anything of that. And for me to be able to cope with that, it was horrible. I felt like dying. It was almost like the dearest thing was taken from me,
mm-hmm.
and there was nothing I could do about it. So, I mean, mourning it wouldn't help really. So, in the book, I just really explain, you know, the whole process and how what I thought or how I kind of helped myself. With the tools I had, and you know, I really honestly I was still partly in shock. So when we are in shock, we are in a fight or flight mood, right?
Right.
It's survival mode. The default mode is survival. It's not you know, everything you learned, it goes down the drain. You forget about NLP or any other therapies. You know, they go. It's just the real survival you, right? The mm-hmm. the you at a bear state, right? I wouldn't say animal state, but really survival. So all the most awkward things pop up, you know, and it's really interesting. I tell you, there is so much hidden within us. We haven't the slightest idea about it, and it's only when you put yourself in kind of out of the ordinary situation that you stand a chance to know a bit more about it.
Right. I just, you know, there's just so much. I mean, we could probably talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But you know, for the benefit of our listeners, what was it like to see some of the wildlife, like the whales and the penguins and those things? What was that like?
It was really. I love animals, and I always wanted to see penguins for real, not in a zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly the thing that I wanted the most was to see a whale. I tell you this anecdote because it's really significant or meaningful. As a race, we almost slaughtered the majority of blue whales, right? Mm. And that particular spot on the planet, it was really seeming in the past with blue whales. At the beginning of the 19th century, the turn of the century between 1800 and 1900, specifically in the Antarctic Peninsula, there were so many whaling stations. So they really slaughtered so many whales. And we still, you can see still nowadays, that you don't see many of them. Many whales in general, because they are different sorts. Forget about the blue whale, which is possibly the the least, there are not many left. So the most popular maybe in that region is the minke whale. So we didn't see any big ones, definitely not a blue whale. And I was really hoping to see whales because, I don't know, I feel this love for them. So I was a bit disappointed because I couldn't really, I hadn't really seen so far that many. But one day I was waiting to go ice climbing again, and I was a bit late. So Peter Bland, who was the expeditioner, was waiting for me in the dinghy. We were waiting for another member of the group to go and reach the place where we would do ice climbing. And I was sitting in that dinghy and I was waiting for the other person to come. And I remember the other groups had already seen whales, and I was thinking, oh gosh, why haven't seen one yet? I always desire these things. I would love to see, look into a whale's eyes. And a few minutes later, I just turned. I was sitting on the dinghy, so with my face looking at Peter Bland, so I had my back to the sea. I turned towards the sea, and all of a sudden I saw from the depths this kind of almost pinkish thing coming to the surface, and I thought, oh my God, don't tell me, it's a whale maybe? And in few seconds, this minke whale basically came up below our dinghy, and I could see it surfacing, and I saw his eyes coming out. And there was a split of a second, but I had an eye-to-eye glance with a whale. And I was just so speechless. My really jaw dropped, as you say, they say, you know, my jaw dropped. And I was just like kind of totally and utterly in awe and speechless that I was granted this desire of mine out of the blue. you are never the same person when something like that happens to you. I always felt very in communion, you know, with the planet, I mean, nature-wise, and also with animals and all the rest. But when something like that, so close, happens to you, it transforms you in such a to such a level, intimate level, that I don't know what to say. You really have to feel it.
So you got your opportunity, and you sat in the dinghy there, and you had this contact with the whale, and it completely transformed you.
It was so so touching. They have such big eyes, even if the minke whale is quite small compared to the blue whale. Mm. It's like a midget, right?
But not many people on planet Earth get to have this experience of what you just described. So, I mean, that puts you in a very select group of people who have experienced live whale sightings.
But that's possibly why I had this inner voice that kept saying after I went back that I had to do something with it. I had to do something with it. And when I realized that I couldn't do the documentary, then eventually I realized that I could write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I've done.
And that's what you've done. You've written a book. Your book, did you start writing the book immediately after you returned from your trip, or did you start it while you were on the trip? When did it start?
No, my original plan was to film and make a documentary. So during the trip, I only wrote my diary like I normally do anyway,
mm-hmm.
and I've done for many years. And then when I came back, because of what happened during the trip, and I was still kind of trying to digest it emotionally and psychologically what happened there, it took me over 2 years to realize that I actually could, if I couldn't do a documentary, I could write a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing a bit in July 2009, but I started writing it as a script because at the time I was still thinking that I could still maybe produce a documentary. And then it was in 2011 May that I decided to go away and write, and I did it in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Basically, it all came out. I redone the bit that I already started writing in 2009, and I wrote it as a book, not as a script. And basically, I write for solid 2 weeks, and it was just like kind of I had the gestation period that lasted 3 years and a bit. And then it just, I went into labor and I delivered it.
That's actually the first time I heard it put that way. It's quite fascinating. Now, your book, and thank you for, you know, the copy that you provided me. Your book is filled with lots of photographs. And there's one photograph in particular. It's I think it's on page 160, where it just says ice climate. And, you know, you look at this wall of ice, and it's got like this blue look to it. Now, I mean, most people, including myself, don't get to see massive amounts of ice anywhere. What is it like, ice climbing, and one looking at this ice? Can you describe it for me? Tell me what it looks like.
I'm fascinated by ice, like I'm fascinated by glass. Maybe they are two elements very similar, right? They are transparent, or they can be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never did ice climbing before. I did a rock climbing when I was little, because my parents would take me trekking in the mountains, etc. But I never done ice climbing, and I was wondering how it might be. And it was kind of challenging because it's really hard. But when you are climbing, you are so taken by what you have to do that you really, you have no time. You have to be totally present, so you have no time really to look at the ice. But when you, before starting, and you look at the ice wall, that's a magical moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can just see this element that to us is kind of alien, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty stranger, and living in UK, really, you don't really see much of it. So it's a kind of something that's beyond the normal, and it's just so different. And I don't know what to say, really. It just seems that it is unconquerable, or you can't climb something like that, but you can.
Yeah, but you can
with a bit of patience. But it looks impressive, and I can understand that it can be something very frightening for some people. Not particularly for me, but, you know, we all have different fears. It doesn't really matter, really.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think you know when people think of a place like Antarctica, you just don't ever, you have no idea. I mean, you can watch all the National Geographic specials you want, and you can watch all the documentaries, but to actually go there and experience it, and to see it, and to be in that environment, it's got to be something that is one of those moments in life that you never, ever, ever forget. Was that the case for you?
Yes, it's something you have to experience. And as I was saying about, you know, my experience of looking at into the whale's eyes, or spending the night on the ice, you know, camping, and really have almost no boundaries between you and nature. It's kind of, it depends on how you are, but it can be such a mystical experience. It can be such an awesome experience that puts you in a state that you cannot know what it is until you find yourself in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like kind of, I suppose, out of body experience. I never had one myself that I can recollect consciously, but I suppose it's something similar. You know, if you don't experience it, it's really difficult to just imagine. And you know, Antarctica is such an awesome place because really you feel so optional over there. You really feel optional. Like you are not necessary. Nature doesn't want you there. You can feel it.
Well, you know,
even just the fact that penguins don't even consider you. They just look at you like they would look at a rock or anything else.
I think it's the first time I've ever had a guest describe an experience where they put themselves in a place of being optional. And it really does give you a different perspective. And you're saying the penguins just see you and just think of you as just a rock or something. What goes through your mind when you have that thought?
Well, it's nice because we, in the civilized world, we are used to have animals being frightened by us, so they run away from us,
mm-hmm.
unless they are pets, obviously. Well, you go to a zoo, but generally speaking, wild animals, they don't just wait for you and come towards you. And so it's such a strange experience to actually experience the opposite. And it's wonderful because you are not supposed to approach them and you are not supposed to touch them or anything like that for obvious reason, because obviously there are strict rules in Antarctica. Like when you go on land, you have to wear a certain boots that they be disinfected, and then you disinfect them again when you go back on the boat, on the ship, etc. But anyway, you're not supposed to shake hands with them, right? But it's really difficult for somebody like me who loves animals so much, because you just want to connect with them,
mm-hmm.
and you know you don't want to harm them, so. You know, you try to keep your distance, but they come to you. So it's really strange. You feel like, kind of, oh my God, is it really real, this thing that is not afraid of me? And I can really, if it just stands still, I can just look at it. But so close, and there's no cages, nothing. And it transforms you and changes from within, because you see, they totally trust you, you know, that you are harmless. And it wasn't like that till, you know, a century or so ago, because the human race has done terrible damage to the fauna there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We almost terminated whales, so, I mean, and the seals, not to talk about the seals, because they were killed for their blubber, etc., so... It's for me, I was aware of all these things because I had read a bit about it and before going. I felt like so privileged, really, that I could be trusted even if I belonged to the human race. But it was very humbling.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, you know, you wrote your book and you had this humbling experience and you know, you faced fears and you lost some of your equipment, and now you've got your book is complete, and it's a wonderful book, and it's filled with many amazing photographs. You know, for someone who hasn't picked up your book yet, for someone who would be, you know, someone that would just look at the cover and say, this is an interesting book, what would you want that person to know prior to them opening up your book to read it? What would you want them to know?
That if they want to stretch themselves and see something with new eyes, and when I say something, I mean themselves, it might be worth reading it, because
mm-hmm.
I really put my most inner thoughts, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one having those same thoughts, like feeling inadequate, not right, not capable, all these things. Even if they might come up from our conditioning, whatever that might be, from family, society, education, whatever, bottom line, we still have to deal with all that on a daily basis. It's just that it's stuff that goes on in our unconscious, so it goes under the radar. And because we are not aware of it, there's little you can do about it until you become aware. So that book is actually, for me, it was giving the chance to myself to go and explore what goes under the radar. And by doing that, hopefully, maybe give hints to others that can do the same. Not necessarily they have to go to Antarctica to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot from many other books. I hope that I can give my little contribution as well, giving back what I, in my own way, obviously. We are all different, so that's my experience. You know, you don't know what is going to, how it's going to affect others. You can only offer it and share it, and then it's up to the other people, the other that wants to read it, to see what it does for them.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, time goes by so fast, you know, and like I said earlier, we could talk for hours about this because this is so fascinating. Now, you know, you've written your book, and your what is the legacy that you want to leave behind for yourself, your family? What is it that you want to leave behind?
Well, you know what, I was saying that I delivered it and it came out, and after that, I'm not a mother, so I haven't got children on my own, so I cannot talk out of experience mm-hmm. about that. But I suppose it's a very similar experience once you have given birth to a child. I remember coming back from my writing trip this time in 2011 and going back home and feeling like, you know, that euphoria, which was an inner state of mind that was caused by the fact that I finished my thing. And I felt like almost, I felt the following. I thought, well, now I've done this. Okay, it's not published yet, but it will be. Even if I had to die right now, I can die happily because I leave something.
Mm-hmm.
Like almost like my life hasn't been in vain, right? Maybe I thought of that because, as I say, I'm not a mother, so genetically I haven't handed down anything. But that was what it really went through my heart and my mind. The epilogue of my book is the list of all the lessons, in a way, that I learned through that journey. And I really thought long and hard enough about them because I really wanted to just select the most important points. Mainly I wrote it for myself because I know that we all forget, even if you've been to such an extraordinary place, and sometimes life takes over and you forget. So if I go back and read that, I will always have a kind of a trace. What are the most important things to always keep in mind, to live thoroughly and in yourself, because the most important thing of life is really living it fully and discover who you are, because otherwise what else is left there to do?
Yeah.
So
can I share a couple of not every one of them, but a couple of some of the things from your epilogue, the lessons that you learned?
Okay.
You know, that, well, one of them is, you know, when I follow my heart desires, I discover my destiny. Lack of balance creates fear and anxiety. Reality is never as bad as I think. And I'll do one more. Let's see. My heart is my best friend with the right advice at the right time. Powerful statements.
I try to make them as short as possible.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a vada mecum, as I said, you know, something
yeah.
I can refer to.
But for our listeners, if you want to get the whole list, you know, well, you have to get the book. You have to go get the book and read it. But, I mean, there are so many beautiful things that have come out of this experience of your book. And so much great insight has come from you. And it's almost like you had a divine moment where you had a complete, total, direct connection with the Creator, and you were totally inspired and given this gift.
Well, maybe, you see, I had to go all the way down to Antarctica and experience the crashing of an iceberg for my heart to melt and my spirit to come back alive.
Wow, that's well said. So how would you want people to remember you? What would you want people to say, Gabriella, this is who she was, how she lived? What would you want them to say?
That's a difficult question, but my nickname when I went to Antarctica was the Antarctic Witch. Now I call myself the Flying Witch because I'm learning to fly. I hope that by living fully as much as I can and as I'm aware of, I can inspire others to do the same and live inspired lives. That's why I call myself Flying Inspiration. Because life is really an adventure. And if you don't explore it, there's nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or to say, really. And the beauty is that everyone of us, you know, is different. So for me, it might be learning to fly or going to Antarctica. For another person, could be anything else, you know, learning to ski or to swim or God knows. It doesn't really matter what it is in itself. It's, the important thing is that you go towards that thing that makes your heart sing, because by doing that you will have an opportunity to discover who you are. And I know it's something that is said so often, and it's difficult sometimes to try to say it in a way that really inspires people rather than just being the common statement and commonplace, you know. But is it really as simple as that? For me, that trip, to go on that trip, it was such a mad thing that it really was following my heart. And it was possibly the first time in my life where I felt that I really had to do it, because you don't really know how much time you have on this planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't know when your time is up. So the most important thing is really being the present. And if something that really is important to you, like for me back then was to go to Antarctica, and you go for it, then it really completes you. If you feel fulfilled, you feel right, content, it puts you in a state that radiates, you know, good vibe and an energy that is so required on the planet right now.
Okay, so would you say that you are fulfilled now in life? You have fulfillment?
So far it seems that I still have a bit time to spend, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm continuing my adventure. And my big adventure at the moment is learning to fly. But the important thing is that I feel every day, I live in a way that most of the time I feel fulfilled because I'm really aware and thankful of what I have. And that I understand that the most important thing is really the journey I have with myself. So to enjoy my company and really find out what is important to me.
Fantastic. So beyond learning how to fly, what's next for Gabriella?
Oh, well, my big project besides learning to fly, which I already started in 2010, is going on. My big adventure is actually to spread my message for women. So I want to go and take my workshop for women around the world.
Okay, fantastic. Now, you know, we're at that final end of the show, and why don't you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you if they want to reach you or contact you? Where can they do that?
Yeah, the easiest way really to go to my website, which is called flyinginspiration.com. There they can send me a message. They can find lots of information about me, my work with women and also with men. And there's also a blog, and there are many websites where they can also find me, besides obviously Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to hear from people who maybe want to have a similar journey. I think there is such wealth in each of us that it's such a joy to be able to connect with other people, right? Like today is with you, Garth, and hopefully, I don't know you personally in person. I haven't met you, but hopefully it will happen one day.
Yeah, absolutely.
But nowadays, we are so blessed that through technology nowadays, anybody is not too far, right?
Yeah.
Because I can talk to you and you are in the States, and I could talk to you in the same way, and it would cost exactly the same amount of effort and money to talk to somebody on the other side of the world, you know, so it's fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, Gabriella, thank you so much for joining us and chatting in Manhattan and sharing your story about your book, Antarctic Odyssey, A New Beginning. It was just fascinating to listen to you talk about some of your experiences and some of the gifts that you've learned. And I hope that our listeners will be just as in awe as I am, you know, reading your book and having the experience to have a conversation with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Garth, for having me on the show today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.